Hello, this is Brian Wappler with another episode of the Chasing Tone Podcast, the podcast about guitars, amps, effects, as well as a healthy dose of interesting off-topic discussions. Joining me today again is Blake Weiland from the amazing guitar-centered podcast called The Tone Mob. How you doing, Blake?
Oh, man. I had turkey legs yesterday, so I'm doing great.
Just the legs?
Just the legs. Just the legs. Smoked turkey
legs. So just dark meat.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
What?
We sat down as a family and we're like, what are we going to do this year? And I was like, well, I like the dark meat. You like the dark meat. We all like the dark meat better than the white meat. Why don't we just do legs? I was like, well, that makes sense. Leave the breasts for somebody else. I mean, not that I don't like turkey breasts on my sandwich or whatever, but I love that juicy dark meat.
We do make extra legs, but we also like the breast meat as well. It's just a different, totally different type of meat, you know?
It's amazing.
Yeah. It's like two completely different birds, totally, but mm-hmm. It's not. It's the same bird, just different parts of the body.
We took inspiration from the Disneyland turkey legs, where, you know, if you get regular turkey legs at the store, most of the time those are hen legs, and they're you know, small-ish. But if you get the tom legs, oh, man, we had like six of those, and that was more than enough for the six people that were there.
Really?
Oh, yeah. We had several pounds of meat left over. They were medieval-looking.
That's amazing. We had a pretty decent Thanksgiving here. It was a little odd because it is 2020, of course, and why wouldn't it be odd?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we didn't have the full crew, just the kids, no parents or anything, unfortunately. So it was a different one, but I will have to say I completely spanked my son in ping pong.
There you go.
Yep.
Wait, so that's not how you're supposed to do it. You're doing it wrong.
What?
Well, if you're spanking him with the ping pong, that's not exactly how that's supposed
to
work.
Oh, sorry. I beat him horrifically, not with the ping pong paddle, but in a game of table tennis.
I'm sorry. I'm just being a difficult over here.
He said, what did he say I had? He said, I had old man game. And I was like, what does that mean? He said, well, you know what old man strength is, right? He's like, that's the only way you beat me is because you have old man game. So apparently that's a thing. I don't know.
I mean, old man strength's definitely a thing.
That is a thing.
I've seen it in action.
Yes. That is true.
There's nothing scarier than old man strength. It's like, look at that little old guy. Oh, he's picking up a tractor. Well, okay. Well, we won't mess with that person.
That is true. Maybe it's all in the tennis shoes, you know?
Could be.
Once you get your first pair of you know, the white tennis shoes, then it gives you super strength.
Yeah. I don't know. It's kind of like, I like it. It's like Superman with the golden sun. You know, it gives him power. The power comes from the white New Balances. It radiates up through your calves. It gives you the utmost strength. That must be what it is.
So I saw a new product out. Saw it as Sweetwater, actually. And it's the Shure MV7 microphone, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, you're probably familiar with the SMB, I believe it's called, right?
Yeah.
It's the podcaster's microphone of choice. This apparently is sort of like that, but it's digital as well, and it's got effects on it, and it kind of makes the whole process a little bit easier. So with the 7MB, you generally want to compress it, and you want to do some preamping and that sort of thing. And this actually has an app that goes along with it, and you can just use both together and get that sound that you know, sounds like a professional podcast on the cheap, if you will. So, very cool product from Sweetwater. I'll put a link in the description if you want to check it out. I don't buy a lot of microphones. I do buy a few. Right now, I'm actually not using a 7MB. Right now, I'm using a SM58. You know, the old standard.
The classic.
The classic is what I'm using right now. But, you know, I'm also compressing and I'm noise gating and de-essing and, you know, all this stuff that goes along with just using a microphone and a podcast. So this particular microphone, if you don't want to mess with all that stuff, you can just do it within the microphone and within an app if you want to use the app. So it just kind of makes everything a lot handier. So if you're thinking of starting a podcast, or if you have one, make sure you check that out. I think it's, what is it? I'm not sure if this is sale price. I think it's $249 right now. Of course, it is Black Friday, so I don't know if that is the Black Friday sales price. Maybe it is, maybe it's not. Check it out, see if you like it. But that's definitely something that I'm wanting to try myself.
It's pretty cool. I just noticed it's got headphone jack built into the back of it, as well as the XLR and then the USB power. So that's actually a pretty unique setup. It's really versatile.
Yeah, and it's got an auto level mode, which you wouldn't think it'd be a big deal, but that's one of the big things that I fight when editing podcasts, is making sure all the levels are the same, because if you back away from the microphone or if you get too close, then the levels of that change. Now, you can compress it, but if you're compressing too much, then that changes the sound, kind of like what you'd have with a guitar. It kind of gets all squishy and a little gnarly for vocals if you compress it too much. So the auto level control really kind of makes it super user-friendly if you don't want to mess with doing all the dirty stuff yourself.
Yeah, or if you get somebody like me who wants to yell, yell into the microphone, then that helps too.
Yeah. So yeah, so I'm going to, I'm going to have to check that out, actually. I wonder if they
it
are.
It might make your life easier.
it definitely would make things a lot easier, because I spend a lot of time just writing the levels, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And finding that right compression point, because even on like your microphone, like whenever I'm editing yours versus mine, the settings are completely different, because I think you're using a condenser, if I recall right.
Sort of. It's a sort of a condenser, which is, I always try to explain this to people. I guess this is Chasing Microphones on the Chasing Tone podcast. The Aston Stealth. And so it's a dynamic mic technically, but it has a Phantom Power preamp in it that I like to use because it makes me sound a little bit more manly. And it reacts a little more like a condenser mic would level-wise, but it's not quite as sensitive as a condenser mic where you could, like, you know, for instance, like, I can occasionally hear my neighbor running a weed whacker, and I don't believe this is going to pick that up, so kind of a weird hybrid.
Yeah, that's what actually one reason why I don't like using condensers on podcasts, because I don't know if you can hear my chair in the background, but it's squeaky.
Mm-hmm.
The condenser mics pick all that up. My heavy, gnarly breathing, for some reason I'm a really heavy breather, even though I'm a smaller feller of stature. But it picks all that up. And this particular mic has like this noise canceling, the Shure mic we're talking about, the MV7, has this noise canceling ability as well, so you can kind of get rid of all that crap. And it is a cardioid mic, so what the big question though that we have to ask, because 7 MBs are great on guitar amps, how does it sound on a guitar cabinet? That's what we need to figure out.
I mean, there's only one way to find out.
There is only one way to find out, and this looks to be a business expense. If I had to guess, this is something that could definitely be a business expense. And I do know Sweetwater's doing a lot of Black Friday-type sales right now, so I'm going to have to hit up my Sweetwater sales engineer and see what we can do, see if we can work out some deals.
It's wheeling and dealing over here.
Well, I do what I can do, you know. So when we were talking before this, before I hit record here, you actually brought up a good question, Blake. And that is, what gear terms confused you as a beginner? Like, for example, you brought up the example of true bypass. I thought, along with that, buffering, you know, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
I think on the Facebook group Guitar Pedals, I've seen a question about buffers at least once a day for the past month.
Right.
It's like every day someone's asking about buffers. And it's just, I'm like, oh my gosh, this is not really as difficult as one might seem. Though we kind of tend to make things a little bit more difficult, you know, as finicky guitar players, I suppose.
Right.
But the other thing is, I mean, it's, people talk about bad buffers and good buffers and boss buffers and everything else, and arguably true bypass, which was very first build as like the best way to bypass, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I don't really think, I'd say most of us probably understand it. There's no such thing as best, right? So sometimes you want it to your bypass and sometimes you want a buffer. But more importantly, what are some other terms? So I threw it out here on the Wampler Tone Group and got some great ideas on it.
Yeah, and this was spurred on by a message I got the other day, and I'm sorry that I'm blanking on your name right off the top of my head, but it was like, hey, I've been listening to the podcast for several months, and I really enjoy it, but I'm a new guitar player, and I don't know what you're talking about sometimes. Is there a good resource for some of these terms? And we kind of went back and forth, and we, you know, explained some things, but I was just flashing back to when I was a wee lad, and like, I know the internet wasn't really a thing back then, but I would call Guitar Center and ask I guess there's no such thing as a stupid question, but in retrospect, the dumbest questions of the people there, because I'm like, I want a guitar, but I want it, you know, I want it to sound kind of like a bass. I want it to sound like XYZ band. What do I need? And they're just like, well, you need whatever that band's using, you know, and it's kind of like,
and then you need to practice.
Yeah. And I'm like, oh, like I was asking these questions before I had even owned a guitar. So I really didn't know. I didn't know what questions to even ask. And so it can be overwhelming. And for those of us like you and me who have been, you know, that's all we do all day is focus on the nuances of this stuff. It can be hard to remember those times back when we were kids. And I know we've talked about this stuff before, and not just kids, but just a beginner in general. This could be interesting to explore, and maybe we can use this episode as a resource for, you can point people to this one. I don't know.
Sure.
We'll see what we can do. We'll see what we can do.
So Stanley Chen says transparent.
Okay.
You know, I could see that. I think I kind of mocked it a little bit in a previous video a few years ago when I was talking about terms that guitar players use, because a transparent tone, I mean, if we're technically speaking, a transparent tone is one that doesn't change anything.
Yes.
Like, it's a buffer.
Yep. One that's as unaltered as possible is what that technically means.
Right. I don't think most guitar players are using it in that sense. Maybe they're thinking it's even when you start overdriving something, whether it's a pedal or an amp or whatever, it's not really changing the character of the amp. It's just giving you, in quotations, more. Again, whatever the hell that means. More what? Just more of my amp.
Just more.
What do you mean by that? Turn your volume up then. What do you mean more of your amp? Like even those terms kind of become a little elusive to try to explain. You know,
yeah, I mean,
a transparent tone. You don't really want a truly transparent tone, because once you start overdriving it and the signals clipping and distorting and all that stuff, that creates like these high harmonics, basically these kind of, it's kind of like high frequencies that sound all raspy and nasty. And a good example for, if you're familiar with it, is plug your guitar into a PA and then just turn that channel like way up, turn the master or the fader down on the master so you can plug in some headphones and not lose your hearing. But just listen to how that's distorting when you just plug guitar directly into it. That would be pretty transparent. And most people wouldn't like that sound for, but there are some that do like that and have used that. But for the most part, we don't really think of that as a great guitar tone.
We'll be right back.
Is real music dying? What even is real music, and who are we to judge that? Well, my father is a lifelong musician, and together we've been making music for over a decade. In our new podcast, we dare to ask the urgent, the weird, and the deep questions, and we have a lot of wild stories to tell. No matter what genres you enjoy, whether you're a musician, a producer, or a listener, we invite you to discover unconventional perspectives on music. So tune in and go follow Mad Makings of Music wherever you listen to podcasts.
No. So this is where it gets muddy. So that's what transparent would technically mean in my mind. But that's not generally what people do mean. What they mean is, it sounds like a clon.
but a clon is super, super boosted in the 1K region.
Yes, it is. Yes, it's got those upper mids that are right. Very, very prominent. And you can hear them. It's not what I would consider transparent at all.
Yeah.
But in a lot of different marketing speak, and I don't actually know that Bill is actually responsible for this. I feel like this is a user thing that came along later. I don't remember because I wasn't paying attention back when these were released. I was a wee lad just watching Ninja Turtles. But like I don't remember how those were marketed back in those days, but I feel like players and different companies who have made clones have taken in them and been like, the classic transparent overdrive, and it was marketed as something that doesn't alter your original guitar tone but gives you these nice breakup characteristics. But if you really listen to what a clone does, like turn the gain all the way down and, you know, just turn the level up, you'll hear it's boosting those upper mids quite a bit. And but that's, unfortunately, I think that's what people actually mean when they say transparent. They want something clon-ish. That's kind of a misnomer.
It is something that I've seen people argue about on various gear pages. Some will say, well, you know, maybe the Tumnus or the Soul Food or what, you know, name your favorite clone-based clone. Some will say, well, that's because it's not like the original clones. The original clones were actually transparent. that really makes me chuckle because if you know the schematic, you can see what happens, like what is doing what. You can put it into software like Spice, which kind of does all the math for you and makes you a nice little pretty graph of what's going on. And you can see that, no, it is not flat. It's not flat. Nope, sorry, it's not. And you wouldn't want it to be. You just would not want it to be.
No, it wouldn't sound good.
That's not what you're going for with that. You want some of that warmth, you know? And to get warmth, warmth is not flat. Mm-hmm. Sterile is generally flat.
You have to boost certain frequencies to get certain different types of sounds. Right. So I think to not, you know, harp on transparent anymore, because we got some other tones to go through.
There's a bunch more, right? Yeah.
Yeah, we got more terms to go through. But transparent, basically, what it really means is it doesn't affect your sound. It does something to your sound that's desirable, whether that's, you know, like a buffer that gives just, you know, preserves your signal and helps drive it through long runs, or, you know, breaks it up a little bit. Whatever the case may be, it's something that supposedly does something to your sound that's desirable, but leaves it as untouched as possible. That's what transparent really means. Generally, as guitar players, when you hear that term chucked around, it's referring to an overdrive that sounds clon-ish.
Yep.
That's what I would say. MIDI, I see that is a term that somebody had a question on, and okay, Facebook's going to crash. Thanks. Who's asking
Facebook
that?
Crashed on you.
Okay, there we go. I got it back. David Fisher asked about MIDI, and did Arturo. Sorry, I'm going to butcher your last name. Aguayo? I don't know. I probably did that really bad. I apologize. But they both asked about MIDI.
Dakota McBride also asked about MIDI as well.
So I went ahead and Googled that while I was doing it because I wanted to make sure that I know what it is, but I wanted to make sure I was using the correct terminology because it's an acronym.
Yes.
A lot of people might not know that it's an acronym, especially if you're just starting out, but it stands for Musical Instrument Digital Interface. And basically, it is a digital language that was developed for electronic musical instruments to be able to talk to each other. So it's a standard protocol, a standard language that lets, you know, your MIDI-controlled guitar pedal speak to your MIDI controller, or your MIDI keyboard, you know, speak to your different synthesizers and your different ins and outs. It's a language that they all speak and can understand, so they know once you activate one thing, the receiving device knows to do whatever it's being told to do. That's the simplest way I can explain
it. Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
That's not too bad.
Yeah, it's basically just allowed, like you said it perfectly, just allows you to use one device to control another device.
Mm-hmm.
I think Chase Bliss have probably perfected the use of controlling devices in a guitar pedal with MIDI.
Yeah, probably they've
done a lot with that.
Yeah. So, I mean, you can do it as simply as like using a MIDI controller to turn on and off an effect. You can use it to adjust certain parameters of effects if that particular pedal allows it. There are a million things you can do with it, and I am far from a MIDI expert, but I know that's what it is. It lets musical devices talk to each other. That's the whole point of it existing.
Yeah. Matt Williams said something that really I never really consider. He said, I remember when overdrive, distortion, and fuzz were all just quote-unquote distortion. He said, learning the difference was eye-opening. And that's, see, that's one of those things I kind of take for granted.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I just, I've, you know, doing it all day, every day, I tend to think that everyone knows the difference between those three. When, you know, maybe a lot of people just do call them distortion pedals, and there's not really a good way to explain what the difference is without getting into charts and sine waves and all this other stuff, you know, that's pretty hard to explain to someone that's just getting into guitar pedals. But, you know, I tend to say, think of overdrive as like light distortion, distortion as like regular medium distortion, and then fuzz, like that's way too saturated distortion, like it's over the top distortion. And that's not, you know, that's probably not the best way to explain it, but that's probably how I would explain it to someone that was just now getting into pedals or effects.
I mean, maybe the easiest way to explain it would be, and this is not a universal thing, but it's like if you're just trying to go listen to examples, like if you wanted to hear a great overdrive tone, go listen to Stevie Ray Vaughan. If you want to hear a great distortion sound, you know, go listen to, I don't know, insert heavy metal band, Black Sabbath, Metallica.
Creed.
That's right.
I like those guys.
Mark's a phenomenal player.
Mark's a great guy. Yeah.
You know, things like that. And then if you want like a good fuzz tone, I mean, that's going to be controversial. But Jack White probably has the most like obvious out of modern players who use fuzz. Like, yeah, he's got a fuzzy guitar sound.
But see, fuzz is so different though.
And wide ranging, man.
It is so. I mean, like, I could see fuzz being something like Jack White or Eric Johnson.
Yep.
Or Hendrix.
Or Smashing Pumpkins.
Or David Gilmour. Like, all those are completely different tones, all using fuzz.
Yeah. Fuzz is the widest ranging one, and it can... I will say this, like, fuzzy drive is a little less common. I have some pedals that can do what I would call, like, fuzzer drive sounds. And that's a little bit of a misnomer, too. Now we're just getting into weird, complicated terms. This is not great for beginners at all. But, like, yeah, fuzz is a tough category because you have fuzz faces and tone benders, and then you have big muffs. And they don't sound anything alike, but they're
nothing
all fuzz
like
pedals.
It. Yeah, completely different. You know, there was – I wish I had the link saved, but I saw – someone on Fuzztopia, I talk a lot about Facebook groups, is because there's a ton of gear groups on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
And I generally hate Facebook, but the gear groups are great on it. Anyways, there's a group called Fuzztopia. If you like fuzz, you probably want to check it out. It's a great group.
Mm-hmm.
And someone had posted a link to a blog or a website that someone had like started detailing all the different types of fuzz, just compiling a list of all the different types of fuzz. And I thought that's a really cool thing to do to build a reference, but that's going to be an ongoing, never ending project.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be a life project there.
Oh yeah. I mean, like the fuzz face, even you take a fuzz face, which is a very simple circuit, and you change one little thing in it. It's like, all right, we're going to go ahead and swap this resistor out for one that's a few ohms different. And now it sounds totally different. And it's,
or even just changing the transistors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, fuzz is at one hand, it's like the simplest circuit wise sometimes, but it's also like the most dense and harmonically complex. So what I would suggest is listen to all of those things that we just listed off, and you'll have a good idea of the range of different fuzz tones. You know, that's probably a good place to start if you don't know what any of that means.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Stanley Chin also has said something about gain versus volume.
I saw that. I was going to defer to you because I know what it means as a layperson, but you know what it actually means technically.
Well, it's so confusing because there's not a real simple way to explain it. Technically, gain is more volume because you're using a circuit to boost that volume, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And there's a limit in everything. And, well, I'm speaking in analog terms here. There's a limit to what that stage will be able to boost the volume to.
Before it breaks up.
Before it starts clipping, distorting. Yes. They call it clipping because if you look at the sine wave starts kind of clipping on it. The shape of the sine wave starts changing. They call that clipping. The sound of it is distortion. So then when you start putting more of those stages together, so you have one gain stage and it's real loud, and then you put another stage after that, well, that stage can't boost the next one up, you know, 60 dB. It just can't. Mm-hmm. It can't do it. It's limited physically by what it can do. So it distorts. And so you keep adding those stages and you get more distortion. And so it is gain. If those stages were 100% efficient and didn't clip at all, it would be a lot more volume. But I think because of amplifiers, having that gain knob, which technically it is gain, it sounds like distortion when you turn it up because it is creating distortion. So now we've confused distortion with the term gain. And
mm-hmm.
I think that's about as simple as I can explain it. So it really is volume. It's just that those stages are not efficient enough to make it a louder volume. So they distort.
So let me try to dumb this down a little bit because I I know exactly what you're talking about, but I think I might be able to make it into dumber guitar player terms because I'm a dumb guitar player. It's easiest to think of gain. So gain in a circuit is what Brian just explained. It is more volume technically. But if you just forget about that and just think about different levels. So like an amp is probably the best way. Like look at a Mesa Boogie or anything that has an independent gain knob and an independent volume knob. The gain knob is going to be your overall clipping level. You know, you turn it way down and you don't have that much clipping. It's not distorting that much, if at all. And you crank it way up and there's lots of saturation, lots of harmonics, lots of breakup, usually in like the preamp tubes, if you're talking about tube amp. And then the volume knob or the master volume knob, that's actually how loud. That's how much you're shaking the walls. So that's probably the easiest way to think about it. That's not technically exactly how it works. How it works is more what Brian said. But if you're just trying on a functional level, it's the same concept on an overdrive or a distortion pedal. If you turn the what's labeled gain up more, it's going to break up more. And if you turn up the volume on the output, it's going to have more volume coming out of your speaker. That's the easiest way to think about it, I think.
The thing that's also confusing as well is if you let's say you have the volumes on, let's say it's a pedal, and you have the volume set at unity, meaning when you turn it off, it's just as loud as when it's on. And let's say that your gain knob is almost all the way off. Well, you can actually turn the gain up on a lot of, it totally depends on the circuit now, but a lot of circuits you can turn the gain up and you will hear a volume increase.
Mm-hmm.
Because those stages are able to literally give it more gain, give it more volume, and until it starts to distort, like I explained a minute ago. And now you have to kind of adjust that volume control. So that's maybe a little bit long-winded way of saying sometimes when you do increase the gain, sometimes it actually does increase the volume as well. So you got to kind of ride both many times. Sometimes you'll turn the gain up a little bit, turn the volume back just a little bit to keep it, you know, the same volume level.
I think I found my video that I'm going to do tomorrow.
There's a lot to that. I literally could probably just talk about that for 30 minutes. Because right now I'm really just kind of speaking in very simple gain stages. When we start talking about op amps, now that's when it gets interesting, because now it's not just like a FET or a tube stage. Now it gets, there's feedback involved, and it could be positive or negative
feedback.
This
is for beginners. Stop it, Brian.
it just makes me giddy with the possibilities you can do.
This segues nicely into another one I saw in that thread. Michael Medek. Medek? I don't hope I'm saying that right. I'm butchering people's names all the time. I apologize. But a term he wanted to know more about is headroom, which is a kind of part of what we were just discussing. So headroom, you can go ahead.
Zachary Ryan, is it Saucier or Saucier?
I think it's Saucier, I think.
Saucier, okay, that's what I figured. He has said the same thing, headroom. How do I simplify this? Because this is...
I'll tell you what I think, and you tell me if I'm right or not.
Okay.
Basically, headroom is the amount of runway you have volume-wise in a given circuit. You know, usually you're talking about an overdrive or a preamp circuit. But it's the amount of volume increase you have before the onset of clipping. So before it starts getting dirty, before it starts saturating, before it starts breaking up. Is that somewhat correct?
That's a pretty good way to think of it. Yeah. So with every type of circuit, you can increase the gain to a point where it starts distorting. And that amount until it starts distorting is headroom. So basically up until that point, that's where you are getting an increase in volume. So maybe that means you turn your volume down on your guitar and it cleans up real nice and you're not really losing any output volume. That a lot of people consider that like a type of headroom, but headroom is really more of a function of a gain circuit and its efficiency, I believe. So, the runway analogy works really well there. That's a good way to put it. I'm literally struggling how to simplify that, but that's a pretty good way.
Yeah, it's like if you're looking at a runway and visualizing it as an airplane, and the airplane at the point of liftoff is when the circuit starts clipping, the amount of headroom is how many feet you have on that runway before the plane takes off. That's the easiest way I can think of to demonstrate that.
Well, Zachary Ryan also asked... gain versus saturation.
Oh boy. Well,
let me break out the whiteboard real quick.
Okay. And this is the other part, is that some of these terms have a lot of crossover, I guess, for lack of a better term, which is also an audio term, ironically. But they have a lot of there's a lot of saying different things to mean the same thing. Like a lot of people will say gain when they mean distortion. Gain is very technically something specific in a circuit, but we as players have come to know it as the amount of breakup or the amount of distortion. So there's a balancing act that you have to do with what the term actually means and what we understand it as. Especially our first example, transparent, was a good example of that. We had to explain what it actually meant and then what most players tend to mean by that. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of that with some of these terms. So gain versus saturation. So like I'm always speaking from a player's perspective because I don't design circuits. But saturation to me is when you start, it's almost more of how it feels. You know, it technically is, when you hear people use that term, they generally are referring to the amount of distortion in a circuit. But I think... as a consumer, what I view it as is where you start to feel it, where it starts to compress a little bit more. You know, you can feel the note start to feel a little bit bigger and have a little more bloom to it. That's what I think of when I'm saying it saturates more. It has a little more compression and a little more Of course, I'm using all these terms that a beginner wouldn't know
right.
to try to describe it. This is so hard. A lot of this comes with experience, and that's really the only way to get to this, some of this stuff. But it's really more about the feeling of the note than what it's actually doing. I probably really didn't help anyone with that statement. At all.
It's like trying to describe what salty tastes like.
Yes.
It like, tastes salty. Well, what does salty mean?
Well, it's like a little bit spicy, but not really.
Right. Imagine stale, and it's the opposite of that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Actually, so we'll wrap this up after this one, but Brett Rockwell had a great thought. And I don't really know the answer to this. He said, why does an amp have two inputs, usually named low and high?
Mm-hmm.
I've heard different things. I've heard some people say that it's because, when the first tube amps that were using high and low inputs, some guitars would be single coils and humbuckers. And so the low input would be for a hotter guitar, hotter pickups, and high for vice versa. I've also heard others say that that people would run two instruments into the same amp.
Mm-hmm.
And that whichever one you wanted louder, you chose the high input for that. I honestly don't know the answer. You may. I don't know.
It's kind of a hybrid. It's one of those things where it depends on what you're talking about and what amp and when. The old Fenders and stuff, some of them just had, like my Champ just says one and two. And I don't know that there's a difference in the channels as far as if you plug one in one versus the other. I think it's literally just two inputs. Because my grandpa and I used to each plug a guitar into it and jam through the same amplifier. It didn't sound great, but there was no like audible volume boost to one or the other. However, in others, there is an audible. There's accordion inputs on some like old Ampegs and stuff that are different than what the guitar input is supposed to be. And some people prefer the accordion input with their guitar. So it is basically, it totally depends on what amp you're talking about. That's what it really comes down to.
For what it's worth, those two inputs on the Champ are different.
Are they?
One's a high, one is a low. One is a higher, two is a little bit lower.
Shows what I know. Why are you guys listening to me?
No, but the only reason I don't know that, I just looked at the schematic.
Okay.
I didn't know either. So, because it's very possible they could, there's some amps are the exact same. You just don't know till you look at the schematic, or hopefully the manufacturer tells you, you know?
See, it's a good thing we have you here to correct me when I say stupid things.
Well, that's not stupid. I mean, I didn't know either, you know? That's why I Googled, because I wondered myself. I didn't know.
Yeah, it just comes down to the amp, you know? And yeah, so, for instance, my I only have one that's, like, labeled this way, and it's my PV Windsor, which I believe is a JCM 800 clone, I believe, is what they were going for with that. It's got a high and a low, and it is 100%, like, there's a big difference between the two inputs. So it just comes down to which one do you think sounds better for your application. If I'm playing single coils into it, I'll usually plug it into the high input because I get more volume and more grit and more yum. If I'm playing humbuckers, though, I'll usually plug into the low input to tame those things down a little bit. So it's always, with all this tone stuff, it comes down to, it depends. Try it and find out. That's usually the answer.
I'm trying to find a PV Windsor schematic right now. Let's see if I can. I keep finding the power section, but I don't need the power section. I need the preamp section, folks. You know?
Give them the preamp.
I mean, I thought, ooh, I just, oh. Apparently, I had it saved. I didn't even know I had the document. How about that? Huh. Okay, so, yeah, those inputs are different. Yeah, traditionally high and low. Sort of similar to what you got with the Champ.
It's much more audible.
Not in the circuit.
In this,
yeah, a lot more gain.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that could make sense.
Mm-hmm.
So yep, does that look like a JCM 800-ish thing to you? That's just what I was told. I don't know what it is.
It doesn't look exactly like one, but it's pretty close. Yeah. 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 It's pretty close to it.
You can get those things for like under $300 and they sound awesome.
I've heard they're pretty good sounding amps. Do they still make those?
No, I don't think they. I think they discontinued them a long time ago. They are way too big. Like the box itself. Like, why is this? It's like 3 inches taller than it needs to be, which looks really cool, but it's kind of unwieldy.
That's a good question. I don't know if there's a gigantic transformer in it or something like that. Sometimes whenever it's a big head, it's because the transformer is monstrous, you know?
I need to take a peek in the back again. I just remember thinking, that's bigger than it needs to be last time I did.
There are exceptions to the rule where it's a little bitty tiny circuit and a great big head, and you're like, why did you do this?
Kind of like a Big Muff.
Kind of like a Big Muff, exactly. Great big, or even a Fuzz Face. Mm-hmm. Huge pedal, like the original, you know, Smiley Face. Big ones. Little bitty tiny circuit in the inside. Little bitty circuit board. Great big enclosure.
The bigger the enclosure, the bigger your tone. Everyone knows that.
Oh, that's exactly what it comes from. Tone mm-hmm. comes from the enclosure.
Well, what else do you got? We have anything else we want to touch on? I feel like we've confused everyone quite thoroughly now. So that's great.
I think that's it for this week. Our post, this is actually going out on next Monday or Tuesday. So I realize we skipped a week last week. My long story short, family's been over for the past few weeks, so it's been a little bit screwy. And then with Thanksgiving and all that stuff, it's just been on par for 2020. Let's call it that. It's been fitting. Good days, but just not my ordinary work schedule for the past few weeks. Well, thank you for listening to the Chasing Tone podcast. As always, if you have any comments, questions, or concerns, you can email podcast@wampwoodpedals.com, and I'll personally get your email. To email Blake, simply email info@tonemob.com. If you like this podcast, make sure to share it with your friends, bandmates, and others into guitar podcasts. Best way to show your support for the show is to share it with a friend, and also hit my friends up at Sweetwater about that microphone. That'll help support the show as well. And make sure to check out Blake's wonderful podcast called The Tone Mob. It's arguably better than this one, I think. Definitely different than this one, but still related to guitar gear. So, thanks for listening. Talk to you next week.